The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for The House from 2017. If you do not wish to have this movie spoiled, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. Did the gamble pay off, or did this movie bust? We watched The House from 2017 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme.
Good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? Got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project Redeeming Features cast, this time looking at The House from 2017. Yes, from this year, and yes, it was suggested by Christian. Christian picked a movie from this year. By the way, I'm Trevor Holland, and I am joined by...
the aforementioned Christian Fletcher. Thanks for having me back, Trevor. And yeah, it is a bit of a gasp-worthy decision to have chosen The House. Look, I'm a big Amy Poehler fan, and, you know, the concept, let's just say. I won't give the plot away because I know you will reveal it. But yeah, it's one of those movies that, yeah, the concept and the plot and Amy Poehler being in it, thought, oh, you know, this would be something I'd like to see. But when I heard how it resulted when it came out in the box office, I thought, I'll wait until the Rufus Project. So here we are.
Fair enough. What a choice. We have that choice now. It's an interesting luxury. I know there's been a few movies I've been curious about, then it's like, oh, maybe I should watch that for the podcast.
Yeah. So. And then if you don't like it, you haven't spent then 4 hours watching a film. So that, you know, when you have to watch it a second time. So yeah, we killed two birds with one stone with this one.
Very, very true. So for those who don't know what The House is about, I've got a little synopsis here. After the town takes away their daughter's college scholarship, a couple start an illegal casino in their friend's house to make back the money.
And believe it or not, that plot snared me in months ago and almost made me see the movie at the cinemas. So I was interested to see how this would play out.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, this one actually has an award in the award listing. Pretty good for a movie that only came out earlier this year. And it won the Best Comedy Trailer at the Golden Trailer Awards.
I don't know if that says a lot about the film when the trailer's the best bit, or maybe they showed the best bits, I don't know, so I haven't seen it. But, oh well, I wouldn't have thought that'd have an award. There you go.
Yeah, I think they have an award for everything now. We'll move on, because that's it for the awards. not too much to say about that. So we'll move straight on to our turkey trivia. So for those who are new, this is where we talk turkey about the movie and go on to a bit of trivia. It's all in the name. So first up, this one's rated 5.6 out of 10 on IMDb. It had a budget of $40 million, and its worldwide box office ended up being... $33 million.
Ooh, that's bad, considering, as you said, that was worldwide, not just in the US. Wow. So maybe those poker machines cost a lot of money and the sets, I don't know. But yeah, that sounds like you're quite expensive also for this, probably this kind of, I was going to say a sleeper film, but you know, this kind of, I suppose, a middle-range comedy. It was just quite strange that they had a budget that big. But anyway, they didn't recoup it.
Well, maybe when we move on to the trivia, this might explain some of that budget, because Mariah Carey was scheduled to film a cameo. However, she never got her scenes filmed. Will Ferrell recalled that Carey showed up 4 hours late, then didn't want to do the scene she had agreed to do. Then she delayed production as she didn't want to sing the song, one of her own, that she was supposed to sing, which would have required the legal department to clear the song. She also required her trailer to be filled with white flowers and stuffed animals of lambs. And ultimately, Yeah, she didn't get her scene filmed.
Oh, gosh. And that would explain, because I actually do remember hearing that bit of trivia, and you've reminded me. And then it makes sense why there's a Mariah Carey photo, a poster in the background in the casino, and I was thinking it was a bit of an in-joke or something, but that explains it.
She's still got her appearance just on a poster.
Yeah, but I suppose at least she's been in true diva style. And, I'd probably only say it's a shame she's not in it, so we can't add her again to another Rufus Project movie that we've looked at. Because she has popped up a couple of times.
I don't mind. I'm fine with less Mariah than more. Yes. Let's put it that way.
So I don't think, and I think it's interesting because the film, again, we like short films. I think this is like 88 minutes with almost 8 minutes of credits. So I'm wondering if her section would have made up a bit more of the running time. But I'm glad we didn't have to see it.
Very, very true. Now, another bit of trivia. It's just one of these ones that decides to pick on something in the movie that wasn't accurate, which is rather an interesting choice. When Officer Chandler and the councilman Bob go to the house with all the casino activity, they just walk in without knocking and they have no search warrant. So no one could be arrested and no money should have been confiscated due to what would have been an illegal search and seizure.
But then you just have to think about the character of the policeman. I don't think he really knew what he was doing in any circumstance. And I think that was thrown out the window with this film in general. Any sense?
I don't think the councilman Bob really cared either, but we'll move on to that, I think, as we chat about the movie. And really the rest of the trivia that I found basically consists of which actors acted with which other actors in various things from movies to Saturday Night Live, and there is so much cross-breeding in this movie from previous things. It's probably just best not to go down that list.
And it seems to be like that in a lot of sort of Will Ferrell movies or particularly whoever was producing this, that, there's always Amy Poehler and, Will Ferrell and a lot of people from Parks and Recreation, I noticed too. So there's a bit of a... Mm-hmm. And it often makes you wonder too if it's supposed to exist in that world. But no, Christian, you're looking too deeply into it.
Are you suggesting a Parks and Rec-based movie universe?
But then I'm thinking, how does that work with Leslie Knope being the mother of... Anyway, that's a whole split personality thing for Amy Poehler. But anyway, we're coming up with better ideas for movies here.
There we go. So, not too much trivia. So, now, this is the Redeeming Features cast. So what we do is we look at a movie with a less than stellar reputation, or in this particular case, a box office bomb, to see if we can redeem it. But to do that, we need to see what we're working with and what we're working from. So I've gone to Amazon and I've dug up a review which gives us, I suppose, the lower end of the scale that we're working from. The title of this review is Lame Waste of Time and Money. An unfunny, half-hearted waste of time, talent, and my $4.99. There seemed to be a lot of potential in the concept, but the producers and writers just didn't put in the time to develop the ideas or the script, and the vamping and improvisation by the actors just couldn't carry 90 minutes of the half-baked effort. Will Ferrell has pulled off a lot more with similar setups, Old School and Step Brothers for instance, but seems to be just running through the motions here. Pretty evidently because he didn't give any more of a crap than anyone else on this production. 1 star.
Wow, there's so much about that review that just, sort of hits the nail on the head about sort of how I was feeling too. And how the critics responded, I remember. It got quite a thrashing, not just as a box office bomb, but, a critical disaster as well. So, I think that's an interesting baseline and probably very true.
Very well. So, and as you mentioned, this one came in at under 90 minutes. Oh, that's pretty
fantastic.
Sweet.
Fantastic. And as I said, 8 minutes is end credits, and you usually know that there's only going to be quite a slight movie or a very thin plot kind of fleshed out, as that first review says. So, not too much effort required on our behalf.
Very true. But I tell you what, I did like the titles.
Yeah, nice
neon.
It was good bringing in and that sort of casino vibe straight away, because, you know, I must admit I love all that sort of glitz and glamour and Vegas-y sort of feel, and I was looking forward to sort of having, I suppose, all those cliches sort of thrown at me with this movie. But and not that I like that particular type of music, but I just love that rap music that sort of lent itself to, you know, that bling and, you know, riches and stuff like that, and they used it throughout, and that was clever use of that kind of music.
Yeah, even with that rap track, it just kind of had like a bit of a jazzy underscore as well, which I do like a bit of rap fusion, so I didn't mind that tune either.
Yeah, and hey, we can't have it all we can't have the Columbia logo, what was it this case? I think it was Village Roadshow. We can't have the logo dancing all the time, so I'm glad they made it up for us.
They did. I still say that, you know, we should have more logo shenanigans going on. It would make things a lot more interesting right at the start.
but yeah, they don't waste any time getting straight into, opening at university, and the daughter, I think, yeah, that's right, they're sort of looking at the university and with her parents, and she's wanting to go there next year, and it doesn't waste any time sort of getting into it, especially now Will Ferrell's a very you either love him or hate him, I think, with his style of humor, and he goes straight for that ad-libbing comedy, or his attempt at comedy, almost within the first 30 seconds, and you almost get the feel it's going to be this type of movie where anything goes.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I did find at the start, it's like, okay, I was thinking, they're sitting there going, okay, that's almost funny, but what it really was doing is getting very concerned about that family. They had a very odd relationship.
Oh, I know. And I think they were trying to spell out, that it was pretty much a threesome in the nicest possible way. You know what I mean? Like, in terms of, the parents, you know, would be lost without this girl, especially if she went away to university. But, you know, it was interesting. Like, even that weird moment when they're sitting on the couch watching Walking Dead, but the parents are pretending to eat the daughter as well, watching, and it was just kind of a bit creepy. And again, you're going, where is this movie going? Because having gone in with this whole, you know, they're opening a casino, so you think, okay, obviously they're trying to bring up this attachment or attachment issues that they have.
Yeah, because like even the daughter blew off going out with her friends so that she could stay home to watch The Walking Dead with her parents. It's like, hey, okay, that's interesting. This is a very interesting family.
Yeah, and you kind of go, where are they going with this? And what I felt, she does finally sort of, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead a bit, she does finally, get accepted into uni, and it's, you know, it's all very quick, and then she's, they're having that barbecue or the barbecue party in the backyard, and I thought, it hasn't taken long before the date rape and the rape jokes start, and it's things like that, you know, when you start to know the crude humor. I've even got written down on my page, it was this section when the poo joke started, this section when the dick joke started. I didn't notice it throughout the whole thing, maybe I was used to it, but it's interesting how they establish that stuff very quickly, and you automatically know what kind of audience this is going for, or what they're trying to do.
Yeah. But then, I think it was Jason Manzoukas turned up as Frank, and I don't know, for some reason, even though he was this completely depressing character, I actually found him kind of charming. That was the first bit of charm I found in the movie, was when the neighbor Frank shows up and hasn't showered for however many days after his wife's left him, and he's just completely, you know, bedraggled, and it's like, yet he still has this strange charm. I think that was a good thing. That was a pretty good job to pull that off.
Well, I think it's, I was wondering too if around then it was that the fact that he was coming across more charming was the fact that I wasn't feeling the chemistry between Amy Poehler and Will Ferrell. I wasn't buying that they were a couple. I don't know if it was something that ended up growing on me watching this film, but I just wasn't sort of getting that chemistry. It felt like they were trying to out-improv each other or out-ad-lib each other in a lot of circumstances, or it was pretty much like they've kept the camera running and just, okay, you two just play off each other and we'll see if we can make a scene work. Like that part where they're saying, when they're talking in the backyard about how the daughter's going to, you know, go off to college and, you know, we're going to, you know, I won't use the language, but we're going to have sex a lot and it's going to become F-fill and all this sort of stuff. And you're like, okay, we get the idea. But it's that sort of film where they kept the gag just went on a little bit too long, and it probably wasn't, as you said, funny to start with.
Yeah, yeah, they sort of kept trying to, I suppose, one-up each other with a joke that wasn't working to begin with. So thinking, that's probably not the best ad-lib thing to keep in there, but they probably didn't have much else to use, I guess.
Oh,
so that
definitely.
Was the best one they had.
And if you, we'll get to the bloopers later, but if you saw what they had to work with, there wasn't much. But, but you know, of course, my ears prick up as soon as the character Frank, mentions to, I've got Will and Amy here. What were they? I think they were Kate and Scott or something, the characters. I'm going to call them Willem and Amy. I mean, what is not Willem, sorry. Will and Amy.
Will and Amy or Scott and
Kate. I'm confusing myself here. But yeah, my ears pricked up when there was mention of Frank going to Vegas with them. And I'm like, okay, this... Already, I'm a bit confused how this is going to tie in with the whole plot, but I'm like, okay, so that, you know, the whole idea of he wants them to go to Vegas, but now I don't know if I'm jumping ahead here. Aha. Uh-huh. So, yeah, he wants them to go to Vegas. They establish that, and then we've got the whole situation with them, pretty much the threesome that they don't want to break up.
Yeah, yeah. So I was trying to think with the because I'm pretty sure the barbecue happens before... The town meeting, where we find out that the town's making a giant swimming pool complex, and as such have removed the scholarship that we're going to give to the daughter, hence why they need money and need to open the casino. they do end up going to Vegas, though. So I think it's just so they could maybe win some money. I'm not sure how that worked.
Maybe to make us, I don't know, maybe make us realize that their casino was kind of similar to the one that they end up making. I don't know. But yeah, I was wondering where this is going to end up going, or I thought, oh, they'll blow all the money and even more money and have to... I mean, it ends up being quite predictable, let's just say, when they end up around the tables. And they look, I always hate these things when their luck hasn't changed and they just keep rolling four so much that they've just won all this money. You're just like, oh, I can't buy this at all, guys.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think the entire point of that was to establish that Frank knew everything about casinos and everything about gambling, because apparently the reason his wife left him was because he had a gambling addiction. And that Will and Amy were pretty clueless. Like, you know, they had the whole thing where on the final roll, Will Ferrell just jinxes it and loses the money for the entire table. And you're going, okay, yeah, I can see where this is going.
Yeah, yeah. And that probably makes a lot more sense why they buy into Frank's suggestions so quickly. Because I always laugh that, you know, it was one of those movies where, yeah, they spend the first sort of 20 minutes really getting through quick. Like, it doesn't take long before the casino set up and everything like that. But, yeah, it seems like Frank just comes to them and goes, hey, let's open a casino. And they're like, okay. It just seems like, I don't know. I even said to my friend who I was watching it with, and I'm like, surely they would have come up with a million other ideas before now, but as you said, with his knowledge of casinos, it makes a bit more sense.
When they do get to the bit where Frank's trying to convince him to open the casino, and we're just having this thing just where they keep showing just how bad Will Ferrell is with numbers, and you know, just can't even do simple addition or whatever. I was like, okay, that's one of the things where that was something that were really really focusing on and really just pushing through, as much as the slideshow presentation being shown by Frank,
which is pretty much just fun.
complete with their daughter going to college and being successful, or their daughter not going to college and basically becoming a streetwalker. And you go, okay, that was tasteful.
Yeah, yeah. Always have to go straight. Always have to go straight below the belt, you know, especially with this type of movie. But they all pretty much as I said, seemed so open with it without much swaying. So, and it just seems like the casino's established a bit more. I kind of would have liked a bit of a them creating a montage, but I did like, actually, not to give them, not saying this is something really wow cinematography-wise, but I loved the way that he was sort of speaking them through what he's going to do with the casino, but it ended up being him walking with the group of neighbours and all that end up going to, you know, that are going to be gamblers there. And the next thing, the casino's open. So they did do a segue quite well, but I think I wanted a building montage.
Yeah, that would have been nice. They could have just kept turning up at the house and more was there. But yeah, the whole, you know, the whole way to get to the casino being the secret fake electric fence in the back of a shopping center that followed the path in the woods through to Frank's house to come up through the basement or whatever. I mean, that was quite clever, and that was pretty well put together.
But and of course, there's always got to be the gag of the guy going to the electric fence. Oh no, it's fake, you know. And you're like, oh, I didn't see that coming. But but anyway, yeah. But I love the fact too. You know, as you're saying, you know, Frank being the big casino or the big gambler, how he just wanted to get more opulent as it went on, and which I appreciated, because when I first saw the casino that they'd built, I'm like, oh, is that going to be it? I was hoping they were going to do a full thing. And yeah, let's just say as it goes on pretty much in the matter of days, next thing they've got a showroom with a comedian. Like little, I like little funny touches like that, that were clever, where they really brought in every cliche you could think of to the point that it ended up being this big casino, you know, run by an Italian sunglasses wearing Will Ferrell. You know what I mean? Like I was worried that it was going to stay at that level the whole way through the movie, just that yeah, we've opened a casino, but at least it sort of kept growing and you know, developing a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, like, at the start of how when it was still just pretty rough and ready, you've got a lot more of stuff with the various, like, focusing on the various people from around the town, and you saw, like, a few people talk at this town meeting where they found out they weren't getting the scholarship anymore. And then the same people are turning up at a casino, and, like, the same arguments and the same sort of like traits showing at the town meeting are just being carried forward, and they're just mouthing each other off in order to build up tension so that they can suddenly go, oh, we can have a fight night.
And was it just me or that whole section, again, one of those, if you can call it a gag, is this whole section where it just dragged out way too long, and I'm like, okay, we've sort of lost track of the whole casino thing, now you've become a fight club, you know, like, yeah.
Lots of build-up. I did like how when the first fight was happening, they basically had gaffer tape boxing gloves. I thought that was a nice touch. But you're right, yeah, there was this huge, huge build-up to this fight between these two guys, and that's over with one punch.
Yeah, and you're thinking to yourself, I kind of want to go back to the casino feel. What, are you going to... I'm thinking, is the plot going to change and they're going to start doing more harder and harder things rather than just the casino? And I was worried this was going to start sort of going off into a bit of a tangent. Well, it kind of does, because we sort of see that... I think Amy Poehler's probably the first one we see sort of, you know, getting a taste for blood and being into it, whereas Will Ferrell's like, no, 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 whereas the next thing she's like, come on, bring it on, like, especially with those two women that were fighting at the council meeting, and the next thing they're knocking each other out with literally blood flying, you know, they didn't hold back.
Yeah, I think that was the whole point, was to get to this bit where these two women fight, and apparently that's when we find out that they both do mixed martial arts courses.
How convenient.
And it's full-on brutal fight, yeah, where they have a joint knockout just so the house gets to keep all of the money.
And then I think it's like the next day when she's at the committee meeting with her glasses on, they're like, oh, what happened to you? Nothing, I'm fine. You know? And I think that's the clever thing, because they'd set up the movie so quickly, as I said, like within the first 20 minutes, the casino's open, and I'm thinking, what are they going to do for the next sort of hour? And I think they were clever in bringing the whole town in on it, because it would have been one of those things that I was waiting for someone to get punched out and then... Yeah, someone to find out, you know, what happened. Oh, we went to this place and did this, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, it ends up going a bit of a different way where it sort of doesn't really know what it wants to be. It sort of is like Will and Amy get obsessed with wanting to kill people and hurt people.
Yeah. I mean, because, yeah, like, every time we come back to it, like, the casino's more, what, bigger and brighter and there's more people there. Like, it's like... You know, it seems like everybody is there except the policeman, the councilman, and the councilman's secretary.
Yeah, I think so. That he's having an affair with, or something.
He's having an affair with. Yeah, they're in no way subtle about that. when the policeman walks in on them, he just goes, "Were you holding hands?" And they just go, "Yeah, we were totally holding hands. We're totally having an affair." Just like. Just putting it straight out there, but just being sarcastic about it. So you're going, oh, okay, yeah, that's an interesting interesting way to approach that.
But it seems like a lot of these kind of scenes were, again, sort of fleshing it out by giving these sort of these characters sort of these subplots just to sort of round the movie out a little bit more. But I just wanted it to focus more on the casino and some of the interesting sort of cliches, which we do sort of see happen. But I don't know, it just never quite gets there with most of those scenes. But probably the first... I don't know, stroke of genius, I think, is the hilarious bit where they bring up the cameras and they find out there's a card counter. I thought that was hilarious how that all plays out with the whole, you know, taking them out to the back room and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. But then, because, they do show you quite a bit of that scene in the trailer, but it ended up being a lot gorier than I expected.
Oh, I know. It's one of those things, even though, you know, let's just say, listeners, it involves a lot of blood squirting out and it always has to have the sound and everything. That's so unrealistic, but it still makes you feel squeamish and gross.
And of course, you got Will Ferrell in front of all that with his mouth wide open and just the blood going all over his face and into his mouth and just going, to my mouth!
Well,
that sort of thing, yeah.
I chose that moment to actually have been eating, so I wasn't too happy about that. And it's not the only time. It's these kind of movies that sort of run off gags like that, because it does come back a little bit later, because we find out that, let's just say that Will Ferrell likes to chop fingers off or attempt to chop body parts off or chop handcuffs off and miss completely. Because I think that's kind of what we're going with the next section, because it's kind of him covered in blood coming out, you know, into the casino with the axe held up, and I suppose it's a bit of a spoof on the whole horror villain as well, too, the axe murderer. But it sort of goes off on a weird tangent here where it's kind of like, oh, is it all supposed to be now about Will's breakdown, like as he turns into this kind of animal and, you know, puts the axe in the tree as he runs into the backyard. It started to go a bit weird there for me, and I was wondering what was going to happen.
Yeah, well, the whole the hallucinations he's having the next day was kind of creepy. just seeing fingers being chopped off everywhere. But I suppose, yeah, that, like, again, they turned that into a thing where, like, he suddenly got this reputation of being this merciless guy who'll chop off anything if people don't pay up or people aren't behaving at the casino. So it almost is like the turnaround, like they're not making much money up to that point. And then suddenly everyone's terrified of them and they all join in. And what, they do the jogging scene where they're jogging from house to house and just knocking on people's door and just intimidating everyone.
Yeah, like you've got to miss
in order to get the pay up.
An overdue library book, and then he literally smashes him through the door and he comes out onto the balcony. But again, this is one of those scenes where you're just like, okay, you're trying to flesh out a bit of a thin plot, because, yeah, we sort of get that whole montage there. And yeah, it starts to go into a sort of different territory where I'm like, okay, what's going to happen now? So
yeah, and like it seems to be like a slow escalation of, I suppose, the more serious side of things as the policeman and the councilman get more suspicious about what's going on and what's going on with those people and where is everybody and why is no one coming to the council meetings anymore. They actually have this whole scene where Jason Mantzoukas, Frank, sees his ex-wife at a restaurant with this guy with a top knot. And there's it's almost like this serious showdown's about to happen, until, of course, he actually makes a move and immediately gets pushed down to the floor after we've seen him be so tough for the past 5 minutes. And it's like, okay, I wasn't too sure if they were trying to actually play that for laughs or actually play that as a more serious emotional side of what's going on in the movie. It was just seemed a bit strange the way they approached that.
Yeah, and it's like what I've been saying. It's like they've tried to, you know, we've got the main concept of the movie, you know, the casino, but they're always trying to, you know, introduce these subplots that sort of don't really go anywhere, or if they are, they do come back. Like, I know, you know, we sort of tie up things with him and his wife, you know, at the end with Frank, but, you know, it's sort of, they sort of, they're inconsequential in a lot of cases. So it's almost like I felt that scene was almost just an excuse for him to be able to say, oh, you grabbed his man bun, something like that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it was the cop that said that, or someone said it. Yeah. So, but as I'm thinking about it, like, it could have been much more interesting if the whole town wasn't in on it and it became this whole thing where it was a bit quiet rather than them just going, okay, there's no one else here. They must all be doing something sneaky. Like, it was a bit of an obvious type thing and probably not how I would have probably written it.
Yeah, but of course, you know, because everyone's going there, it doesn't seem to take much investigation for the copper and the councilman to actually find out about what they need to do to get into the casino. You know, go to the shops, go to the backyard, go to the back fence, go through the woods. There you are. You know, very very secretive way to get in there. I'm surprised it took them that long. That was probably like the biggest suspension of disbelief I had to have, was just how long it took for them to be discovered.
Yeah, especially when it got to the point where they're actually opening up the backyard pool and they're all, you know, like, what is it, Club Ooze or something like that? Where they're all getting served cocktails and things like that. And I'm like, this is going to be quite obvious to the neighbourhood, even though the whole neighbourhood is there. But did you, I don't know if you thought so too, but do you know how they brought in earlier that they were going to spend the money on opening a new pool? I was waiting for some kind of a tie-in with that, but it didn't go anywhere. I was probably overthinking it.
Yeah, the only thing about that pool is just a throwaway gag later on when the model inevitably gets broken. But, you know, it's not really much more to it, that side of things, really.
Yeah, exactly. And a chance for Will Ferrell to make a joke about doing a poo in the pool, because that's always hilarious, those jokes. So, yeah, yes. Again, saying the kind of humour. Not that it was as potty as I'm sort of making it out humour-wise, but, it didn't hesitate in going that level with any of the way through.
Yeah. If they could go for a basic ground level joke, they weren't shy about doing that.
Exactly. But yeah. you were saying that the whole bit about he starts getting a bit more tougher and he gets known as the butcher in the neighborhood. But yeah, I did like it when it was that whole transition when Amy Poehler started wearing the cocktail dresses and he's smoking long women's cigarettes and wearing women's Italian women's sunglasses and saying, oh, they're Italian. You know, I liked when it got to that level and you're like, yeah, they're playing with the big guns now, you know. And then you've even got like all these high rollers, you know, doing cocaine off the tables. Hey, I'm doing $1,000 a bet. I'll do what I want, you know. So, but you're always had in the back of your mind, what is going to happen that's going to tip it over the edge, or end their scheme? Let's just say.
Yeah, and the whole point was that, you know, they get their money confiscated. Oh no! And at the same time, I think they have this thing where they see a movie, they see a news story about the guy that they chopped the finger off, and how he works for this particular mobster. And is that Jeremy Renner on that very small screen? Okay, we'll be seeing him soon, sure enough.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
The guy
to see.
Comes back with his boss, Jeremy Renner in tow.
And I actually thought they could have brought his sort of role, you know, that kind of mob boss role in a little bit earlier. It could have been sort of like, you know, a rival casino that was sort of, so that these people were competing with it. But yeah, I thought he was kind of underutilized in that respect. But he got the chance to get caught on fire and lose some limbs.
Very, very much so. Yeah, they kind of had the whole thing where you think the daughter is actually going to be kidnapped, him, because of course the daughter and her friends find out about the casino and sneak in, and that's when the parents' big secret is out, and you think, yeah, there's going to be a whole, you know, having to rescue the daughter, but nope. Will Ferrell comes through with the axe, aims for the handcuffs, as you mentioned before, that she's attached to Jeremy Renner with, and lops off his arm. And it's just like, okay, that Yeah, that escalated quickly.
And of course, again, the unrealistic blood spurting all over everybody at the casino, and you're like, yeah, okay, you've done this before, and it was gross the first time. But I did appreciate that Frank sort of did whatever he could to put him out as such, and makes it worse by someone uses a super soaker, and pretty much everything they pick up, he goes, no, there's vodka in that. You know.
That's what I wanted to do.
But I did appreciate, I was waiting for a big joke at the end, because I noticed when Jeremy, or the stunt double, whatever, ends up getting rolled up, it looked like this very big joint, and I'm thinking to myself, I was waiting for some kind of reference from Frank, and he didn't use the opportunity.
Okay, the one joke they didn't go for.
They could have gone for anything else. But and that was quite, you know, when Jeremy did turn up and there was that whole scene with the daughter, yeah, very anticlimactic, to the point of that could have been sort of like the ending of it, but it always had to have that little, just had to have that little bit extra, which of, you know, involving the, what's his name, the counsellor,
Bob.
Bob, that was it. Because that's right, they have that What About Bob reference. Oh, I loved that. And they're all sticking. I do appreciate, I thought Trevor will appreciate that, where they're all going. Yeah. They're all pretty much going, how could you not like Bill Murray? It was just a moment there. I thought that was great.
Just to show that this Bob guy really is evil, because he doesn't like Bill Murray. Oh, no.
I think it's probably before this, but hey, we're all over the place, but we find out that the money that he was supposed to go into the pool, he's been, oh shock horror, smuggling and swindling himself, so you know, they pretty much decide to hatch a plan, you know, to get him to back to the casino. I'm probably jumping around the place.
But, yeah, well, basically, they pretend the casino is still running, so that, because the cop rocks up and just goes, that he really hates Bob, so he's happy to help Will Ferrell and family steal the money back. But, you know, of course, when he tells them the combination to the safe, who does he give it to? The guy that's bad with numbers. Oh,
and of course, we have to bring up that whole thing from earlier that we'd brought in with the character. He's funny with numbers, and of course, he has to start thinking about it. And the poo / ice cream emoji has to come up as well, like really random things.
Just to show that, you know, he can't focus on the numbers, but you know, he remembers. Woohoo. Of course.
But I think it was... But by this stage, you sort of weren't really... not sort of caring as much, too, because you're always like, I just wanted more scenes at the casino. But,
Yeah, the casino's burnt down now. Now we've just got to watch this mildly amusing chase scene throughout the council offices, because all the way in the lead-up to them getting the money back from the safe, like, every scene, there's a guy in the background with, like, one of those waxing machines.
Oh, yeah.
Waxing up the floor. So, of course, as soon as the chase starts, everyone's falling over and sliding on the floor and knocking over pot plants.
Oh, hilarious. Oh, the three of us ran into the drinking fountain. Oh, yeah. So, and yeah, it's almost like they got to this point in the movie, instead of ending it, they just sort of wanted to make it this slapstick, a big chase scene that was not climactic whatsoever, you know. And by this stage, I was starting to think, oh, okay, they're not going to end up with any money, and the daughter's not going to go to uni, and the three of them can live happily ever after in their weird family thing. But it doesn't sort of go that way.
No, like they get the councilman to admit to skimming off the funds in front of the policeman, and then saying that, oh, you're also on these cameras that point turned on, yeah. And the whole and the councilman, yeah, sort of like going, well, I have needs too. I've got to do things, and that's the whole What About Bob?
Yeah,
the refers to himself with the What About Bob? That whole reference comes in.
Because I was thinking, God, if they hadn't have had that cop on their side, this would have been a totally different movie. Like, you could really, you were expecting these guys to get really bloody busted when they finally do get caught with the casino, but it became quite underwhelming.
Yeah. So, you know, inevitably, of course, they get their money back, and what was it, Jason Mantzoukas or Frank and his wife get back together when the wife, they're standing outside the burnt husk of the house, and the wife just goes, well, the insurance company didn't know that I removed most of the furniture and all of my jewellery. And so they get back together by planning to commit insurance fraud together. which was an interesting take. Yeah. I thought that was a nice touch. It's just like, okay, I burnt the house down doing something illegal, so now we'll do something illegal to get all our money back and get back together.
Well, I suppose, yeah, considering the whole movie's about doing illegal things, I suppose, it probably does make sense as a conclusion. And I suppose it works out, too, the same with Will and Amy, I suppose, too. They end up not doing insurance fraud, but pretty much taking an axe and blowtorch with them wherever they go.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so they're like, we do get the whole scene where they're seeing their daughter off at the university because they could pay the tuition now, and it just gets so soppy.
I know, the whole best friend.
Is this
going to
be any more? Yeah, it's going to be any more cheese ball? And then the whole they can't get out because a guy's pulled up beside them, so they just get out of the car and threaten him with the mini flamethrower lighter and the axe and drive across a medium strip.
And then pretty much, which is not the ending I kind of expected. I was sort of expecting me with the casino again, but I was expecting it sort of a cutback where you find and they drive to another house and they've opened up a casino somewhere else. I don't know. And they've got whole other double life. I wasn't expecting the whole axe and blowtorch. So I think we're pretty much seeing a development, like, Frank's become a bit ballsier and Amy and Will have pretty much become rule breakers and gotten closer as a result. I think that's what we're supposed to learn. With the daughter away, they can now become best friends
and terrorize the town, I guess. Yeah. But I mean, they might be going to another casino. We've got to leave something for the house too.
Oh God! Well, based off the box office, well, I was going to say in this case maybe the house didn't win. I was going to say they're not going to make their money back possibly. So. We shall see. But, wow, I didn't think we'd get to the end so quickly.
I know. It's not quite the end because as the closing credits start rolling, we've always got that great thing where they throw in outtakes.
Oh, look, I can appreciate blooper reels or outtake reels when they're funny, but this really felt like they didn't have any, but they had no other way to fill out this... These end credits, there was a couple of chuckles out of a couple, but most of them just felt flat.
they're just basically, riffing on stuff that they did earlier in the movie and you're just going, that's the danger of outtakes, because, if they're actually funnier than what's in the movie, you're like, well, why wasn't that in the movie? Yeah. Why wasn't the scene we got the outtake?
Yeah, and I often think when I'm watching things like that, oh, God, I hope you didn't do that for too long. The director would have hated you, because I've been on a set before, and I know you can't ruin too many takes, let's just say. I'm sure with those sort of comedians, they'd be used to all sorts of riffing, and you kind of got a bit of an insight into exactly the dynamic between them when they sort of broke character or in many cases didn't break character because they were pretty much playing themselves. But that was kind of the insight
very
there.
True.
But then it was like, I was still looking going, oh, there's another 5 minutes of credits after this. And there's the, it's good having some shots of, roulette wheels and tables and stuff like that over the credits. And then the boring black ones at the end. So they really milked them for almost 10 minutes.
They did indeed. For a movie that's quite short and doesn't really have a lot in there, there was a lot of names in those credits that were just thinking, why isn't this over yet? I don't know. Okay, that's right. I made the rule to sit right through to the end of the credits, so I've got no one to blame but myself.
And it would have been interesting to see if they'd left Mariah Carey's name in there. Probably not.
Oh, did look at that. Give her like an honourable mention or something.
Thank you for ruining. Thank you for taking half our budget or most of our budget for stuffed animals.
Absolutely. So I guess that's gotten us to the end of The House. That was quite a jaunty little chat.
Oh yes, and it feels about as short as the movie itself. But I'm glad I finally got a chance to see it. So, but I don't want to let you know my thoughts just yet, even though some of them are quite obvious, I'm sure.
Mm. Yeah, I think, you did pick this movie, Christian. So as per our normal tradition, I shall go first, if you don't mind.
No worries at all.
So my thoughts as to the redeemability. So, look, there was definitely, this was an interesting premise. but it was pretty just easy to see what was coming up next. It was very, very predictable. I did find myself drawn into this movie, though, part wanting to see if it would surprise me at any point, and part, you know, that sort of horrified fascination you get from seeing, like, a car crash or something? That pulled me along. Still not a fan of the outtakes at the end of the movie, and these ones just weren't that funny. I was spending quite a bit of time at the start of the movie being worried about this being one of the movies that I would almost find funny. I find that if I almost find a movie funny, that's worse than it not being funny in some cases. But at the end of the day, it did manage to get a few decent laughs out of me. And that's really what I'm going off. I found that this movie was just funny enough, and the leads were just likable and good enough, and the action that was just compelling enough, and the story was just interesting enough, and I did really like how the casino just grew and grew and got more spectacular as the movie went through. So really, at the end of the day, I'm going to say that this movie is just redeemable.
Wow. Interesting, Trevor. I wasn't expecting it to go that way, but as you said, it's just on the line. So as I'm still sort of, you know, up in the air about my decision as such, but I saw myself nodding with a lot of that, but also a bit of a contrast, actually. I went in with this, you know, like with you, what you said, loving the like such a great premise, you know, opening a casino in the basement. There's so many things you could do with this, and I was looking forward to being able to see all the sort of casino cliches, which, as mentioned, we see that, you know, with them taking him out to the back room and you know, the card counter and all that sort of stuff, and like what you said about the casino getting better every time. I really appreciated that, but I like you said, it was very predictable. I actually was in the other side of it. I wish it had been more predictable I wish it had fit the mold that I thought it was going to. And instead it kept going off on a tangent where, you know, next thing they're breaking into people's houses that have got overdue library books, and it starts to become this whole sort of thug thing. And then you've got Will Ferrell running around with an axe, and like it's all about his sort of psychological breakdown. And I'm like, where are we going with this? I thought this was just a cool concept. So and the chopping off of the limbs just got a little bit too much, or mainly fingers. I didn't find myself, you know, laughing with this, and I felt the whole time I wanted it to capture that full sort of Vegas feel, and in many cases it did, but not in the way I thought it was going to. I thought Amy Poehler would be able to save this, but she even seemed a little bit off on her game in this time around. But I'm probably going to go on the other side, Trevor, but just on the line as well, but I'm going to say this film is not redeemable.
Oh, these lion calls are always always contentious. There we go. It's a split decision. So if anyone out there wants to know if this is redeemable for them, they're just going to have to watch it themselves.
And hey, it's not that long, and it's quite recent, so it's probably not hard to find.
Absolutely, absolutely. So there we go. A split decision.
Ooh.
Yep. It's been a while. I think we had a split decision not too long ago. So
yeah, I'm sure.
Right.
Yeah,
it happens. It's all good.
I tend to erase the movies out of my mind. They all blend in together. But yeah, so not saying that I wouldn't watch the film again, but yeah, I'm under the line. So
there we go. So we couldn't get a definitive answer on this one. So there we go. Check it out if you want to. That's all we can say. But, you know, I found it just redeemable. You found it just below the line. But this movie does indeed have its fans. And this is the Redeeming Features podcast, so we do like to finish on a redeemable note. So I went and dug up another review. And this one is titled Funny and Really Snappy. One of the funniest movies I have seen in a while. Funniest all year, by far. Ferrell and Poehler are a great duo and play well off each other. There is a good story behind all the nonsense, and Kroll and Jason Mantzoukas kill it in this one. I really like this one, and you will too if you like this type of raunchy comedy. 5 stars.
Well, there you go. They're definitely over the line, so it does have its fans out there.
Absolutely.
I can't agree with them, but it's good that it has some fans.
Yeah, well, you know what? Again, people can enjoy whatever they enjoy, even if they're wrong. But we shall move on. Okay. And Christian, it's kind of just, as most of this podcast, we find things that just like sneak up on us and to the point where we often miss it. This time I've actually realized in time that our next one is going to be the last podcast, except for, say, our irredeemable Christmas feature, which I hope we will do again year. So, we're basically coming up to the end of the season of the Rufus Project this year.
Oh, wow. Where has that time gone? Probably used to watch really bad, or in some cases, good movies.
Absolutely. So next time around, being our last episode, we're actually going from a request to finish off the movie.
Oh, interesting.
The movie, the year. And those who have listened may remember Chris Richards from our Doctor Strange episode that we finished off with last year. And he has come through with a suggestion that we check out a movie from 1977, but it wasn't actually released on DVD until 2003. So this is a bit of a deep cut cult classic. And basically he will be joining us again, by the way, as we discuss, and please wait while I pause for dramatic effect, Deathbed. The Bed That Eats.
Oh, I was wondering if this would ever come up. I don't want to say too much. I have seen this movie and, I never thought this would be on the redeeming features. So, Trevor, you're in for... Yeah, I'm not saying anything else.
I have seen some bits of this movie and I'm aware of its reputation. So this is going to be quite the interesting podcast, yes.
We do a comedy cinema night where we have comedians talking over the top of movies and they even refuse to do this film.
Wow.
This could go anywhere.
Oh, my goodness. So funny enough, this movie isn't available on most of the streaming, or pretty much any of the streaming channels. You might have more like outside of Australia, but certainly nothing's officially available in Australia. But last time I checked, the full movie was watchable on YouTube for free.
Yes, and I think that's where I saw it too, so... Yes, so it is obtainable.
So if you do want to check out Deathbed, The Bed That Eats, before our next podcast, I can point you in that direction at least.
Oh, that's going to be interesting. Oh, and I'm glad Chris is able to be there, because in case we have to throw things at him, you know, I was going to say over the phone, but that'll be an interesting conversation. And what an interesting way to bring us into the Christmas one as well.
Absolutely. Oh boy. I'm looking forward to this in a strange way. I haven't watched a dodgy 70s horror. Would you call it an exploitation movie as well? I got the idea that it was
exploitation trash, foreign. Yeah. I think it's European or something. Yeah.
It's just we're throwing everything at the wall to finish off the season of the Rufus Project. And of course, if you would like to get in touch with us, do you have any redeeming features for Deathbed? Do you think we were too harsh on the house? Do you think we were too generous? Do you have any movies that you think we should check out, or do you just want to say hi? You can get in touch with us super duper easily. You can head to our homepage at rufusproject.com and leave a comment below this very episode. You can find the Rufus Project on Twitter or Facebook very, very easily. You can send us an email to podcast@rufusproject.com and we'd certainly be happy to hear from you for whatever reason.
Definitely. And there's always something coming up Christian Fletcher-wise. Sorry, a bit of a segue there. I actually remembered to mention it this time. So we're very nearing the end of the year with not too many events left. So we've got Casablanca's 75th anniversary and a few 80s movies like Princess Bride and Dirty Dancing. So head to christianfletcher.com or Christian Fletcher Events on Facebook.
Absolutely. Some awesome stuff coming up there. And if you want to have more podcast fun, Susie and myself, my wife Susie, we do another podcast called What the History on the Rufus Project Network. Yes, it's a network. We have two podcasts. That's good enough for me. So if you head to wthpod.rufusproject.com, you can find a bunch of podcasts. They're quite short, about 20 minutes on average. And we talk about two bits of bizarre history to make you say, what the history? And that's definitely a nice, fun, and educational one that's also good for the kids.
Definitely recommend it. So from bad movies to historical tidbits, I think it's I think that's got a lot of bases covered.
Yes, indeed. So I think this is probably a good place to wrap up and just contemplate what we're facing for next time around.
Oh, Trevor. Actually, it should be, oh, Chris.
Yes, I'm not taking responsibility for this.
We can tell him our thoughts when we when we chat.
Absolutely. So until then, Christian, you know, we may have had a split decision, but I've really enjoyed chatting in the house with you.
Oh, definitely. And as we always say, if the film's no good, the chat's always heaps better.
Absolutely. So in the meantime, though, enjoy watching whatever movies you like to watch, and we will catch you next time with Deathbed, the Bed That Eats.
Now I lay me down to sleep, and I pray my soul to keep.
And if I die
before I wake, I'll come for you, and your soul I'll take.
Deathbed. Say your prayers. Rated R.
Good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. IMDb says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.